Okay. Hi, everybody. My name is John. I'm an addict. You know, I've never been so well prepared with all this shit that I, you know, usually I just kind of wing it. But I really felt like it's a very important and I just think it's a very important topic and one that's real, real close to me. And there's some things I wanted to kind of use this to reference some of this, but I really wanted to be able to tell you more about what my experience is with one disease, with one program, you know, and one recovery, and how it's manifested itself in my life. I mean, we all have got great ideas, you know, about what the shit maybe means and what it doesn't mean. And, you know, it's really an honor and it's a privilege to be here, and want to certainly congratulate all of you for attending ARC to One. Big, big deal. Rather, Nakona One. Gosh darn it. I've had a lot more experience with the other than the former than the latter, you know. And it's been a real privilege to be involved here. And, you know, usually by the 4 o'clock speaker, I mean, I don't know how it is with you. I'm usually out checking out other stuff, and I got shit to do, you know, because I've got the banquet and all that stuff like that. So, God, you guys, I had this vision that maybe there'd be like 4 people here. So things have really kind of changed in terms of my own perception of things. But anyway, really, really an honor and privilege to be here, and a first convention for a place is a big deal, and the big deal is Northern Arizona, and the need and an interest and passion for making sure this message gets carried here. I mean, being in the valley, I mean, and for those of you who are in more metropolitan areas, there's a lot of things we take for granted around recovery, you know. I lived for about 6 years in Wickenburg, Arizona. And I remember for 2 of those years, every Thursday night, I would sit with one girl in this house that we rented and wait to see if anybody showed up for an NA meeting. A year and a half till that first person walked in. That's Narcotics Anonymous. And I mean, there were times when I wanted to cut out, and there was times when that girl wanted to cut out. But we'd get there and we'd convince ourselves to stay, you know. Because after 30 minutes, I'm ready to blast the hell out of there, you know what I mean? She was like, no, John, we got to stay. And there'd be times when she'd be going, I got a date, or I got to go. No, we got to stay. And I'm so glad we did. I mean, we reached a place where we had like 60 people attending that meeting. And they were from treatment centers all over because there was an interest in the message. And when I think about, you know, how I got here and what the disease was in my life, I just want to share with you a little bit about I was a prime candidate for this program long before I knew I was a prime candidate for this program. I was born on an Indian reservation. I never met my parents. Both of them were alcoholics, so I had that FAS thing. And that's not necessarily an implied endorsement, but certainly was I almost died. And was raised by my grandma until I was about 7. Then I went off to boarding school for a couple of years, which was a real yay experience. If you're sitting here and you know a little bit about boarding schools, I want to just reassure you that everything you've heard is true. You know, it was, you know, kill the Indian, save the man. And that's what it was all about. And a pretty abusive kind of scenario. And I still deal with and work with a bunch of guys who are survivors like me of that. And and then I got adopted after that, after my grandma died, by a non-Indian family who just kind of had me as their little token half-Indian boy. And so I really didn't know much about love. I really didn't know much about acceptance. I really didn't know much about having kind of a hope that life was going to be halfway decent. I was hopeless. I was hopeless by the time I was 8 years old and I went off to that boarding school, for sure. And it wasn't until I got to this fellowship that I started to understand a little bit about what those words meant. And it wasn't that, you know, because I would hear those words, you know what I mean? It was one of those things. When my stepdad was beating the shit out of me, he'd tell me about how much he loved me, you know? That was a pretty crazy mixed message, you know? So I think it really kind of set me up. I mean, I'm not using any of this excuse, by the way, for an excuse for becoming a drug addict. But what I will tell you is it certainly laid a pretty fertile ground for somebody who's got low self-esteem, sense of lack, sense of worthlessness, to really be able to try to look for something outside of themselves to feel good or to feel something other than what the numbness that I was experiencing most of my life up to that point. So I got involved in like lots of things very early, as many of us do. I mean, my first drug of choice was fantasy. I was a big comic book reader. I read everything I could get my hands on, and it didn't really flare up on me. And some of you know this story that I'm going to share, is that when I was in sixth grade, you know, they go around and they ask you in school what you'd like to be when you grow up, you know. And somebody says, oh, I want to be a doctor, I want to be a lawyer, a teacher. You know, those that always said the teacher were like the real brown-nosed kiss ass, you know. And the teacher always loved that. Oh, that's so sweet, you know, that's so cool. And it got around to me, and they said, what do you want to be? And I said, I want to be the Green Lantern. And the teacher said, I mean, everybody in class, you know, how you do, when you say that thing, or you're like, if you fart or something like that, everybody turns and does the thing, you know. They all turned and did the thing. And I knew, you know, how you say something and you wish you could take it back. It was one of those moments, you know. And the teacher said, I want to see you after class. And she said, I cannot imagine why you would say that. And I remember vividly telling her, you know what, I'm into intergalactic stuff. These problems you guys are facing here on Earth are nothing compared to the stuff I'm dealing with. She said, okay, we have a trailer back here behind the school for guys like you, you know, and that's where the Robins and the Blue Jays really were, you know. I was identified immediately as special ed because of how I looked at things. And I'll tell you, the perception I had of life was pretty distorted, really distorted. And I mean, when we talk about, you know, I'm just going to kind of go a little bit about where the disease was for me. And I mean, everybody has their own story. And the disease of addiction has infested itself in all of our lives in some way, fashion, shape, or form, you know. And what it's going to mean to you may mean something different than it means to me. And what it means to me is a place of lack, a place of emptiness, and a way to fill the void. It was the only way I could begin, even to begin to feel anything. And so when somebody said, hey, do you want to smoke this? I was on it. Somebody said, do you want to snort this? I was on it. I mean, I had a lawnmower business for about a year, but it kind of went down the tubes because, I mean, the lawns would look really straight in the morning, but then the gas would happen on the rag and the lawns were gone, you know. And it was like that. I mean, I could get hooked on anything I like. There's still some great truth to that. Because I did not have what? A spiritual defense. You know? And that's been my experience. Like I said, I've been here since 1986. And it's no coincidence that I'm here today. You know, how'd I get that kind of time? Because I did what you guys said. It wasn't because I somehow figured out how to get out of the box, as somebody mentioned earlier, how I was going to get on the other side of addiction. Because it wasn't going to be like that for me. I had to learn from you guys and be, you know, what did we say? It says in the basic text, when we were beaten, we became willing. Nobody comes in here on a winning streak. I've yet to see it. No. You know, I haven't seen anybody come roaring in the door, hey, they're Narcotics Anonymous, I'm so glad I'm here, whoopee. Most of us come in here when our asses are falling off and we got no place else to go. And that's how it was for me. I was on a path bent of self-destruction and where the ends were always the same. The ends were always the same. So that was the how does the disease of addiction got started with me. And then how it's continued to manifest itself in my life is, you know, pretty evident, I think, for me at least, that, you know, I still have issues in terms of not seeing things as they truly are. I distort reality, like how I thought there were only going to be three people here. Hello. Or how I thought that maybe this convention was going to bomb, because I still have a lot of fear, you know. I still have a lot of senses of being afraid, because I don't know, and I'm still waiting for the other foot to fall sometimes. And I've done a lot of work, man, a lot of work around here and a lot of work in the steps to be able to be at least in the capacity that I am today. And I mean, I'm at a spot now where I guarantee you, I wouldn't want to change places with any one of you in this room. Well, maybe one exception or two, but for the most part, I wouldn't want to change places with anybody here, you know. And it took me a long time to get here because when I first came here, and I'm going to talk a little bit about how the program influenced me. And it's really kind of, I think, an exciting story in that I remember our first meeting and Dan and I were talking about this after, just before the meeting. And I mean, I'm that guy that went to a meeting and I stayed clean after my first meeting. And I'm going to tell you, why that was, and it had very little to do with me. And it at that time was, I wouldn't say different than it is now, but I mean, I'm troubled tonight, and I'm troubled because there's no newcomers here, and it's a very disturbing thing to me because it's a COVID thing, you know. I mean, I don't know personally if I could get clean now given the way the situation is, where somebody says go zoom in on this. Well, I mean, if I had a computer, I would have traded that off long ago, you know, plus a phone, you know, I mean, it just wouldn't work for me. And these guys that are new that are coming in here now, they are fucking warriors as far as I'm concerned. Because, I mean, it's tough. It's just really tough. Because I'll tell you what happened to me at that meeting. These guys said, oh, sit here. Oh, in fact, why don't you sit right here in front? I'm like, oh, okay. And I'm thinking, these guys are pretty serious about this stuff. And you could smoke at the meetings then, too. I mean, I thought that was going to be the end of Narcotics Anonymous, too, when they pulled the plug on that. But it's another story for another time. But I mean, the room was filled with smoke. And I'm going like, they smoke here. This is cool. I'll get a cigarette, you know. So that was what I was really thinking. But after the meeting, I thought, I'm so glad to get out of here. These guys just came and scooped me right up. And they said, you're coming with us now. I said, where are we going? They said, don't worry about it. You're just coming with us. Because we know where you're going if you don't come with us. And they were right. So I kicked for 2 weeks on a guy's sofa. And I said to these guys, why are you doing this? Because, I mean, they'd go to work and they'd leave me to watch CDs all day. Remember what CDs were? But, I mean, that's what we did, you know. I'm thinking, I have no idea what this has to do with getting cleaner with recovery, but they just said, stay here and watch these CDs, so that's what I did. Don't leave. And when we come back at night, we'll take you out to a meeting. And that's what we did. Because when I'd see other guys come into the meetings and they'd say, oh, I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do this, and I'm so happy to be in Narcotics Anonymous, and I mean, all bets were off when they left, you know, and I knew that was the truth for me, too. And so what Narcotics Anonymous was for me was a fighting chance. And I finally found people that cared, you know. And it's, we don't care how much you used, who your connections were. You know the tape, you know. I think that's really true. And I think that unconditional. I didn't really realize it was love at the time because it was too. That was word. The L word was like too strange for me to even get then. But it was that compassion that somebody cared, and I could tell they really cared. They cared enough to have me go in their house because there was places nobody would even let me near their house. Because I had a habit of, when I went in people's houses, I helped them with some of their belongings or things or whatever they might have that I could lay my hands on. You know, I remember it took me like 2 years before I was clean, before I quit scanning when I'd go in the house, you know what I mean? I was a shopper like that. And these guys let me stay. And I, for some reason, I never stole anything from them. I thought about it. But I also knew what the consequences might be for that. And these guys were pretty tough guys, man. And I knew they'd beat the shit out of me if I did it. So I was like, I'm not going to do that. You know what I mean? That's the strong hand of Narcotics Anonymous as far as I'm concerned. You know what I mean? We will pull each other up and call each other out on stuff, sometimes whether we like it or not, you know? I've had people tell me in meetings and sponsors and peers tell me things about myself that I, quite frankly, did not want to hear. You know what I mean? Because, I mean, for me, that's really what the program has really been about, is learning to listen to things that I want to hear and talking about things I don't want to talk about. And you guys told me that's what you have to do here. And I go, what? I had no idea even what they were talking about. And then they said, here's these steps. And so take a look at these steps, you know. And what am I supposed to do with these? You're supposed to work them. I had no idea what that meant either. But I did know what the hell powerlessness was. It didn't take long to point that out to me because I'd been living underneath a bridge, you know, down in South Phoenix in a cardboard box. I knew that was powerlessness, and I knew that. You know, it wasn't high-end living, you know. And I realized that at that point in time, if I wouldn't do something different, I mean, I was going to die. I was going to die. And so it's like, I wanted to share with you a little bit because I don't want to burn up too much time. This book here, I'm just going to give it a slight endorsement. Living Clean. If you don't have it, check it out. I'm a big basic text guy. Trust me. I mean, that was it for a while. You know, I remember when we had even the books before that. So, I mean, this book has got some really great shit in it. I mean, I don't know if you've ever taken a look at it, but if you haven't, I just want to read a couple things to you. It's like Living Clean is a lifelong journey, and the NA program gives us the tools to build a life infused with hope. No matter where we are on our journey, we believe it can get better, and we believe we can get better. We practice living a principled life and find a new way to live. We try things new, and some of them suit us better than others. As we experience Living Clean with its ups and downs, miracles and struggles, dead ends and open doors, we see the world more clearly and better understand our place in it. And that's what the program of Narcotics Anonymous has given me, is a place to live in this world that I really never had. Because I didn't fit in, you know. Native American people didn't want anything to do with me because I was a half-breed. Dominant society didn't want much to do with me either because I was half-Indian, you know what I mean? So it was like there was no place for me to really land, you know. And there's a part in this book I want to share with you, too, that's called Finding Our Place in This World. We start with the goal of not using, and our dreams and goals grow as we recover. When some of us crave material, success, or social status, others of us want no part of that. Ultimately, we define social acceptability for ourselves. So it's a moving target, and it changes over time. What we consider acceptable in life in early recovery may not be adequate or even embarrassing later on. Ah, haven't we experienced that one? I think back sometimes at the shit I used to do around here and think it was all recovery related. It was not. Trust me. And we don't have to go into details because we've all done that shit. You know? Oh, I'm doing this in the interest of recovery. We learned how to justify and rationalize even the most ridiculous things. Because that's the other part of addiction, is ignoring the obvious and believing the unbelievable. I mean, I can still convince myself of anything, and I'm sure you can too. I think it's time now to talk maybe a little bit about the whole idea of the promises. Because, I mean, this is not the Something for Nothing Club. But if we want something here, it isn't just going to rub off by osmosis. I mean, it's not my experience that it's going to happen just by reading the books or by talking to other addicts or by calling your sponsor once a week. It says in our literature pretty clearly this is a program of what? Action, you know, and results count. Results have counted for me since day one. And if I wanted those results, you guys told me I was going to have to work for it. Not so good. Because I believed I was part of that Something for Nothing Club. I somehow had it coming, even as far back as the history that I had. I still believed I had it coming. I deserved it for one reason or another, because of the shitty life that I had had. And I told myself that story, and that was such a huge lie. Such a huge lie. You know, and that's part of the disease of addiction, too. It will tell us things that are not true, but we'll believe. Just to kind of go on with the whole thing about the promises, I want to read to you again from this. The Living Clean book, it says, the more progress we recognize in ourselves and fellows, the more we know it is possible. What first appeared to us as a way out now appears to be a way in. Into a life we hadn't imagined. Into joy, into hope, into growth, and it never stops. We continue to get better. We continue to discover new ways to live, new freedom, and new paths to explore. We travel together as one on the fellowship, and we pave the road as we walk it for all who may follow. No matter how far we have come, no matter how far we know we have to go, we live clean and the journey continues. I mean, the promise to me is that I have a chance today to be the best John I can be. The promise I have today is that if I stay clean, the possibilities are endless. I have a life now far, far, far beyond what I ever imagined I would do. I work for myself. I've got my own company. I've got a master's degree in social work. I mean, I have a life now that I would have never dreamed I would have. And it hasn't been a real smooth trip either. I can tell you, I've burned through relationships, and I'm working on getting better at that too. After 3 marriages, one would think that you could start to pick up on that. Got a little work to do in that area. But you know what? I'm doing the work. Because I finally feel for the first time in my life, I've truly got something to offer somebody else besides myself. You know. Well, I don't want to burn up any more time because I know Dana's got a lot of things to say, but I just want to close with this last little thing. It's something that has kind of come that I like to do. It's from an old Gladys Knight and the Pips song, and it goes like this. If anyone should ever write my life story, for whatever reason there might be, you'll be there between each line of pain and glory, because you're the best thing that ever happened to me. Thanks for listening, guys. God bless you.
Thanks, John. Let's welcome Dana G.
Hi, family. My name is Dana. I'm an addict. I need a 5-minute thing just because, you know, it's good for me. Wow. It's super great to be here. Super great to be here. And rock on Northern Arizona. Like, fuck yeah. Like, you guys pulled this shit off. And there was just a few. That's right. Like, fucking A. Just a few blocks in the way. Just, wow. And I was just thinking, and I'm pretty sure Nakona rhymes with Corona a little bit. My head does shit like that when I'm getting nervous. But anyway, I was like, what? I think it does rhyme, you know. And I almost asked somebody, and I thought, do not do that. Because I was getting all squirrely with myself. Inside my head, right? It's really good to be clean today. And I really love you, John. Thanks for keeping the doors open and for showing me that it works. And I learned a lot of things about you today, some before the meeting and some during the meeting. I appreciate that. Sometimes there's just not enough time to get to know us, to get to know each other, or we get to know each other and then, you know, there was 3 minutes or 4 minutes before the meeting, and like you just connect, and it's just so sweet to connect. And I'll tell you what I've learned recently is that masks can't keep us apart, and viruses can't keep us apart. And our eyes mean way more today than they used to mean to me, because you can just really see. And sometimes, I don't know, maybe looking at other people's mouths, whatever. I mean, I know that just sounded wrong. not that that never happened, but you know what I mean. Oh, you know it's good when you crack yourself up. No, but you know, when you look at each other's eyes, and I like the energetic hugs, because I'm not hugging today. And so, but I can look at you and take a breath, and I can see you way different than when my arms were around you. And it's really good to be part of this, and I'm really super grateful. no matter what. That's my solution. That always works. Like, no matter what, no matter what, no matter what, I don't pick up. And somebody somebody was telling me today, and this person is my friend and has been my friend for several years now, and they were telling me that they heard about me before they really met me. And I was like, really? They were like, yeah, people were telling me all the shit that had happened to you since you got clean and you didn't pick up and you kept coming back. And there are days when I forget about those times. You know, there are some times that I have forgotten. And she reminded me that one of the first meetings she saw me at was the day that my mom died. And I had, my mom had fallen and hit her head, and she was on blood thinners. And they medevaced her down from Payson to the Valley to get better care there. By the time she got there, the blood had smushed her brain because it didn't come out, and she was never going to wake up, and she was on life support. And totally got to stay with her that night and got to tell her a bunch of stuff, ask her for a bunch of stuff, and she couldn't talk back. And that's kind of a bad joke, but, you know, like, it was just a time that I just got to spend with her that last night. And a lot of things happened that next day. We thought we were going to have several weeks before we took her off life support. My son was in the Navy at that time and somewhere on an aircraft carryover by Australia. And I had made the phone call to him, and I had called my oldest nephew, who is serving a natural life sentence for shooting somebody when he was 16 as a result of his disease and his mother's disease, and got to call him. And her sister was flying out from Chicago, and I got to wash her hair and try to make her look better, because that's what I felt I needed to do. And my good friend Keith was there to support me. Ironically, Keith was there to support me through my father's suicide 15 years before that. And, you know, I knew that day she started to run a fever, and there was too much congestion around the base of her skull, and it was like 108, and her heart rate was like 175, and she was going to have a heart attack. And all of the family that could be there was there, and we decided to go ahead that day and let her go. And then I realized I wasn't going to be able to leave that room because I knew that I would never see her again. And so I called my friend Sonia, who was a home group member with me at Home Sweet Home. And that wasn't not my current home group at that time. In fact, my current home group is TGIF, and that's Fridays on Zoom right now. At 8 p.m. And we also have a Tuesday night. The TGIF, you have to figure it out yourself, but it's a women's meeting on Tuesday night. And it's at 7 p.m. on Zoom right now. So we expanded during this time to a women's meeting. And I said, I need you to come and get me at like 4:50. And I will meet you in front of the hospital, and I need you to take me to Home Sweet Home. Because I'm not gonna. I couldn't think that. I did not want to leave that room. You know, what was really cool is that I had a nephew and a niece. My nephew is still clean, although he doesn't do what I do to stay clean, but he stays clean. And I had them. They both one, and they're these young kids, and they both had a hand, and we were kind of like three people just holding hands, walking through these hallways, and trying to get into the elevator without letting go of our hands, so they could walk me to Sonia's car, so I could get in that car. And you know, we got to the meeting, and it was only like 5:20, and I said, I can't go in yet. Like, it didn't start till 5:30. I said, you need to drive around because I don't want to walk in there and talk to anybody. And I was just barely holding on. And she had a young son, and there was Batman was in the car, this little Batman dude that had rotating arms and stuff. And I said, can I have him? She said, yep. I won't tell my son. I said, okay. I don't know why I wanted Batman. I was just barely functional. I hadn't slept. I just know for me that no matter what means, I go to meetings. And I go to meetings no matter what, and I go under whatever circumstances are happening. And I call and I ask for help. And I'm not saying those are not always my first choices, but usually they're my first actions. And that courtyard in particular, if you've never been to Home Sweet Home, it's at 1701 South College. And I'm just telling you that there is something really, really, really magical there. My son took his first steps in that courtyard. So many great things have happened there for me. Spiritual awakenings. It's where I first realized that that I was likable, and that people didn't like me because they thought they could sleep with me, or because they wanted to sleep with me, or because I might hook them up with some good dope. I realized that it wasn't because I had service positions that nobody else wanted, although it took me a long time to figure that out, and before that I felt really important. And so thank you, N.A., for that. No, that's some true shit right there. And I don't want to diminish the fact about how important and needed I felt. But maybe I just didn't have my eyes open yet, and it took me a long time to understand our language. It took me a long time to not get triggered when I saw a basket go around. It took me a long time not to get triggered when I heard the word God. It took me a long time not to feel afraid to talk to people one-on-one, but only to feel safe in a group. A long, long time. I came in pretty tore up too. Pretty tore up, and I had some pretty good psychosis going on. I was not sure that I was not mentally ill. Because I could not not want to get high or put myself in dangerous situations, that's not what I called them. That was the norm, and that's where I felt okay, was when my life was in danger. It kind of cracks me up that I'm scared of germs I can't see. And being scared or a scared, I think I said, I think that it's a different thing. But I'm not going to go there really. But like, I was so fragile and so ferociously fucking tough, all at the same time. And I was really, really afraid of women. And I now know it's because I was really, really afraid of myself, because I was not trustworthy. I knew nothing about listening to my own inner self. I knew nothing about, I did not want to get clean. I wanted the pain to stop. And I remember 7-Eleven was one of the first outside meetings that we got to go to, if you did all the things required at the treatment center and blah, blah, blah. And there was a guy named Dave who got 5 years, maybe it was my second or third meeting, and I was kind of embarrassed for him, because I thought, well, shit, like, you are proud that you don't use? Like, I hadn't even gotten there yet. Because I thought, well, it must have failed, because I really thought my ears weren't, like, I thought you were going to teach me how to use again. Because, see, using saved my life when I first started to use, because I hated being me so bad that it just sucked being me, and it had sucked for a long time. And the first couple of times I used, my whole world changed. And all of a sudden, it didn't suck so much to be me. Now, at the end of my using, it had once again become that place where there just was not enough. not enough different ways to get it in, not enough different combinations, and I couldn't get away from sucking to be me. And I remember being pissed when I would wake up. And so it took me a long time, but I kept coming back because I had no other choices. There was no other choice. And it's not that I didn't look for them. I think I still looked for people to bail me out or whatever. And I remember when the pink cloud started to happen for me, and it was funny because I had 3 or 4 months, and I was like, has the sky always been like this? People know my name in a meeting, and there was no reason why. I had done a landscaping starting at 16, and I have this relationship with fresh cut green grass, and the smell and the cut, and I cut teas and greens for a while, and I cut a lot of lawns, and I don't know, maybe that was like my first relationship with a power greater than myself, because when I close my eyes, if I think about fresh cut green grass, I can still smell it. But when I would look at grass, it was like, it was brand new. And I hadn't felt that, like, I was like somebody had turned me on. Like, not physically, sexually, but spiritually. And not that that didn't freak me out. Because then I would squirrel off into the cult likeness of us, and I was trying to figure out all the reasons why it wasn't going to work for me. And then I realized I didn't think about getting high today. And I remember in the beginning it would be like every time I would go to a meeting, every time I would be around any of you, I thought about getting high. And meetings were hard on me. And I was like, I didn't one whole day. And then I didn't know if thinking about that I didn't think about getting high all day counted as me wanting to get high, and that it negated my day. But like, so I would try to, like, I was all up, you know, trying to super analyze stuff and figure things out. And what was starting to happen is I was starting to recover in the way that I was capable of recovering. I want to tell you, I didn't do it like they lay it out. And I did it the best I can, the best I could. Not one person, not one woman ever came up to me and said, you need to put some different clothes on. Not one woman ever said, if you don't work some fucking steps, you're going to die. Not one woman ever said, man, you have service-based recovery. You might want to work some steps. But they all just stood next to me and walked. And half the time I ignored them. And it was the men in the fellowship that really taught me a lot. Because I couldn't relate to the women. And it took around 10 years for me to be able to feel safe. And it was one of the women's convention that I got drugged to. And just truth be told, I did take a gun, but I thought I might need it if we broke down or something. I'm just saying. And when I look back, I'm pretty cracked up about that. But what I learned at that convention was that when I hang around you women, I see me. And I see how terrific and how great and how amazing and how strong you are. And it hurt because I could see myself. And I didn't know how to be that girl yet. I didn't know how to be that woman. And I started to have a crack open. And it came with a bunch of snot and a bunch of tears and a bunch of resistance. And you all just stood there with open arms. I have the most amazing women in my life today. In fact, sometimes I hang out only with women so much that I feel awkward around men. which is really adorable. That's some fucking adorable shit right there, because that never would have happened. Thank you, N.A., for letting me feel like that and for letting me depend on women. And I'm not afraid of my own greatness anymore as much, but some days it still really hurts. Some days playing small still feels comfortable, but for really short periods of time. And I'm hardly ever mean to myself when I know I have acted like that. Not picking up no matter what, is really helpful when you get diagnosed with breast cancer and you have 24 years clean and you just graduated with a new career that took you 10 years to finish school for. And figuring out how to how to reach out for outside help, because I no longer liked me in some ways, and I didn't know how to be in my skin anymore. Like, no matter what, it's not an option. It doesn't mean I don't think about it. It doesn't mean that one promise for me is that I can lose the desire to use. That is such a damn gift. We show other people how to do that. I'm sad too that there aren't any newcomers that identified today. And if you are a newcomer and you didn't identify and couldn't identify, no big deal. If you guys feel safe enough, if you'd be willing to everybody close their eyes just for a second. With my eyes closed, the world kind of disappears around me, but what I can tell you is that when my eyes are closed, there's absolutely no difference between me and you. It doesn't matter how much money I make or you make, or what my gender is, or what the color of my skin is, or who I choose to love or sleep with. It doesn't matter if I have germs in my body. It doesn't matter how much clean time I have. That we get to be one person right here in this moment. We're all the same. And that's what feels like home to me. When I open my eyes sometimes, sometimes my brain cells will just want to pick out all the things that's different about me or all the reasons why I think you and I should snuggle or whatnot. And I can just tell you all these things, but when my eyes are closed, it's all the same. Thank you, Narcotics Anonymous. You can open your eyes again. Thanks for doing that. Sometimes in meetings, I have to close my eyes because my head will get all spinny on me. Or I'll think something like, with that much fucking clean time, you ought to be. And then I remember, yeah, if I can go look in the mirror, girl. Let me give you my list of things I should be. Or I should have this shit together. And I just want to tell you, I'm fucking badass. Now, when I'm hungry, angry, lonely, tired, and I've added some S's, by the way, so I'm going to share those with you. When I'm hungry, angry, lonely, tired, sick, sad, sexual, or stressed out, I do not make great decisions. Funniest fucking thing. And so there's a lot of some of those things I can kind of control some of them. I can control what and how much I eat, and I can control how long I lay in the bed. Sometimes sleep and I, we have this tango nowadays. But that makes it easier not to pick up. It makes it easier not to think of ways and means to make me feel different on the inside. Something about that sign that was right out front. I just want to say, yay, Buc-ee's. You know. And I said walking in, I'm not going to gamble today. Now, it's never been my thing, but I know it could be. And it was funny. I was all good with it until the person I was with said, that's right, we don't have enough fucking money for that. And my addict said, oh, fucking yeah. Are you fucking kidding? And I was like, oh, how adorable is that for my addiction to show up and act like. It's funny. It's funny. Do you know that I can feel good from do-it-yourself home projects. I can go without running water for a week before I think of calling somebody for help. And I feel such like a fucking badass that it makes me feel high. That's some funny fucking shit right there. That's how my disease of addiction still shows up. I can drink a soda pop and think, I just want to feel that burn in the back of my throat because I don't drink them anymore because I know that they're not blah, blah, blah. Because I'm really health conscious now and I know that I want to eat things that are medicine for my body instead of poison. But I can think it'll be different this time. I kid you not. Like somehow I will feel... Like, I won't remember that when I eat bread, there is not enough food. Like, I start thinking about grocery stores and is there, it's like I spin out. Now I don't eat bread anymore, except for when I do. Because I think, well, it's fucking Thanksgiving. I'm just going to have a bite. They were pretzel rolls. And think it's going to be different. And so I tell you, just to be sure y'all know that, like, And I've done a couple other behaviors that I came very, very, very close to not liking me enough to want to pick up a substance. Especially because there's some things I haven't tried yet. And I like to say yet because it's kind of like that gambling thing. Because I don't want to try to pretend that I'm not still that same girl who walked in here and didn't understand what you were talking about and thought, you have 5 years clean? Like, dude, like, why are you bragging about that? Like, shit. So, just for today, my thoughts will be on my recovery, living a new way of life. I really believe that I do know how to live clean today because of you. And that Gladys song, that was awesome. I totally thought you were going to belt it. I really did. I was thinking, if he does that, I will not be able to do this after you. So thanks for just saying it because I thought, oh, oof. I only have a few minutes left. And so all of us have a higher power. It is not me or Nakona or a pandemic. And it's okay to feel safe and to feel at home here. You are absolutely my people. I don't get to do this without you. And we stand strong and we can be here and we can get through this. And I don't even know what that looks like because it's all uncharted. And that's what makes us badasses at that kind of stuff. Because I just want, all of us had our own uncharted path. And then we all ended up in the same room. And I want you to know, there's a million, billion other places that all of us could be. And you choose to be here. And so, like, be your badass self. What I do know... There's a bunch of people who aren't in this room who could be here. And there's some people who aren't in this room because they aren't here anymore. And there are some people who aren't in this room because they haven't gotten here yet. And I would just like to take the last 30 seconds or so, and if you want to think about them or call their names out, that this would be the time that you could just remember them and we could all just hold them. Jocelyn. Eden.
Jeff. Richard.
to Yonah. River. Jacob. What a sweet, sweet moment we get to share and hurt and be together. Thank you for letting me share tonight.